Hello and welcome to Between the Lines. This is a podcast where I get to break down my favourite songs, lyric for lyric, bar for bar, line for line, but with the artists themselves. I'm a massive like music podcast fan, and I always thought what was missing was like the in-depth conversation with the artist. Like I could go away and analyse it, probably come up with the wrong idea or the wrong message of the song. But how about I sit with the artist and really get to it? So Dowdy Matsiko, welcome to Between the Lines.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Oh, pleasure, man. I feel like I'm 10 years late to the Dowdy party.
No.
I am.
No. It's still early doors.
No. Let me tell you how I came across you. So basically, last year I had this genius idea, which I might do every year, which was I looked at the Great Escape lineup, which is a Brighton festival. It's kind of like a South by Southwest showcase festival for artists on the rise. And I was like, you know what? Let me make a playlist of all the artists I don't know. So I listened to every single artist on the lineup, all the ones that I didn't know, made a playlist of my favourite, and you were number one. And then I shared it publicly, and then my step-parents were like, oh, do you know what? Can you share that playlist with us? We're going to be at the Great Escape Festival, and we want to go and check out some of those artists. And they went to go and see you.
Oh, no way.
Yeah.
Oh, that was a really special gig. I kind of cried. I had a cry when I saw your tweet. It's hard to explain. Maybe it's not. I had a long time away from releasing music, not necessarily making music, but didn't release anything for a while, and it really felt like a bit like a Lazarus sort of moment. Like I put the first single out from the new record out in April before the Great Escape, and I was just hoping it would reach people.
Yeah.
And I saw that I was actually getting out of my car when I saw the I think Scrimshire messaged me the playlist. And I saw the message on my phone. I went on Spotify and I saw I was the first track, and I was like,
yep, number one, straight in. But yeah,
and I was like, multi-story, yeah.
And I heard that at the end of the gig, like, you know, my stepmom, Manisha, she still talks about that gig, you know, speaking about it the other day, and she was saying that like, at the end of it, like, people were just hugging you.
Yeah, yeah, it was really emotional. I didn't think anyone would be there. That was the other thing, low key. I was like, Naomi, my agent, had booked it, and everyone was really positive. But I was just like, I don't know. I've been away for ages. I don't know if anyone really cares. And then before I went on, so the act before me went on, and they were great. And the room empties out, like, because it's festival, it empties out. And I was like, all right, well, here goes. So I go backstage. preparing for an empty room. And I come back out and it's full.
Wow.
And then the venue rep was like, we've hit capacity.
Wow.
Before I'd even gone on.
Yeah.
And I was like, what's happening? And I was just so gassed that everyone turned up. And it was a really sacred experience, you know. Like, I think all live music's kind of sacred. But we had this... it just really felt natural, and the audience came with me, you know. Like, there's some heavy songs in the set. I've got a song called Darby's Dose, and I've played it before in rooms where the room's just like seized up and become really tense, because the song, it touches on a particular story of a man named Darby from the transatlantic slave period, and it's a really traumatic tune in a way to explore and to listen to. But the audience came with me, and there was this moment in the song when I was playing and I could hear sniffling like crickets, and it was just it was really beautiful, and I felt like every song really connected, and I cried, it was really emotional.
Sometimes in life you just need a win, right?
Yeah.
You need a moment to be like, this is why I do it.
I've got it on video. I got a standing ovation that night, and I think that was the first, I don't know if that's the first time I've ever had one. It was amazing. Yeah.
Well, do you know what? I think it's a great time for me to gift you with some wine. We call it like a wine breaker.
Oh, big ups.
Yeah, and the idea is, like, I'm a big wine drinker, and I love to listen to music and drink wine.
Amazing.
That's like how I spend my time.
Perfect.
When I'm not working. And I try and find a wine that, like, I feel like might match the song.
Nice.
But I've also realised that as I'm doing these with each episode, I'm actually quite a basic wine drinker. I'm a Chianti Primitivo, that's me.
Shiraz
but
me up.
Shiraz you up. Oh, if I'd have known. I was in Lidl, actually. And I was like, it just wasn't popping. The wine there wasn't. So I might have gone too highbrow here.
No, no, all good. I'll happily yeah, get amongst it.
It's a dry white wine.
Okay.
It's meant to be like sort of light and energizing, but also with a citrus edge.
Ooh, okay.
So I kind of thought, like, you are like a reflective artist. You know, maybe on the surface, people think, you know, oh, Dowdy, so much, you know, like, he's like such a, like, you know, like a joy lights up the room, but there's also kind of like a citrusy edge of like sort of realness and
you being
really wearing your heart on your sleeve, whether that's the up or the down.
Oh, I'm so gassed. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Oh, thank
you. So enjoy. You have to do a reaction video.
Sweet. Done.
Yeah.
I might even try and
drink it,
take it out tonight.
Yes.
We'll see. I don't know who's backstage with me tonight, so I don't know. Don't peek too early.
Yeah. Well, let me know. Do a video. Yeah, please do. Right, now we're in.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's very kind.
Pleasure. So the song that we are breaking down is the song that ends the album, I Am Grateful For My Friends.
Mm.
To be honest, it was really hard actually to pick which song to go for, and almost like 24 hours before, I was like, I don't know which one to do, but I just thought, you know what, gut feeling first, this is the one that I kind of, I am most drawn to.
Yeah.
On first listen, I would say, because as you listen to the album, you know, more and more different songs have different moments, different lines, you know, you pull out. And I just realised that maybe sometimes, like, as listeners, so much of it is surface until you really get to know a song.
Yeah.
And I just wondered, first, where were you like physically when you wrote this song?
So I might have been at my parents' house, or in my house where I recorded the whole album was made in a two-bed flat. No, not a two-bed house, terraced house in Forest Fields in Nottingham. And I've got this memory. So the riff, the main riff, I'm pretty sure I was watching TV at my folks and I just got on the guitar. I don't know if you can see it, it's in that case. This is a guitar that's built by a luthier called Jamie Swannell. It's handmade, beautiful piece of beautiful instrument. And I remember the riff. I remember watching a TV show and coming up with the riff. And probably the bulk of lyric writing was probably done in that house in Forest Fields. It's kind of like quite a rough and ready, vibrant. I don't live there anymore, but I really miss it. It's a place that really feels alive.
Yeah, and that's your folks' house.
No, this is where I was living in Nottingham at the time when I made the record. Forest Fields. It's just an exciting place to be. It's hard. Yeah. Rough and ready is fair, I think. But yeah, it's beautiful.
There are a lot of artists and that come out of Nottingham, and it feels like there's quite like a kind of, you know, great grassroots scene for live music.
Mm.
Yasmin Lacey is on this podcast. Mm-hmm. You performed with Yasmin. I told her I was going to have you on the podcast. Oh, Dowdy,
we know
each other. but is there something about, you know, Nottingham, living there in this kind of rough and ready place that kind of maybe added to the way that you make music?
Yeah, I think even that particular track, I'm Grateful For My Friends, it really is a place where I've built friendships and community, and particularly the music, it's incredibly wholesome in Nottingham. People look out for each other, go to each other's gigs. When I was working on this album, friends came out and saw me and spent time while I was circling the drain. There was, you know, it was this whole record was self-produced. So I produced the whole thing, and I'd never produced anything before or engineered, really. And so I had to learn on the job, and I had some proper low moments because I didn't have much confidence. But I was really committed to this idea, and my friends were really integral to the survival, my own survival during that process.
Because you don't often get a song about friendship, you know. Yeah. You get romantic songs, you get breakup songs, you kind of get sometimes, you know, introspective songs about loving yourself, but you don't often get songs, especially from a male's perspective, about friendship.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. I'm really grateful that it turned out that I did that, but... Yeah, I felt compelled to write it.
Yeah. And what was like, what compelled you? Like, give me the sort of setup around it, the sort of pretense.
As I wrote the lyrics, I'm a big fan of trying to make people laugh in songs as well. Mm. And so like the opening lines, not much fun these days, I guess. Humor, well, I used to have it. I wish I was less depressing. That particular chunk just made me chuckle. Just, well, especially after like the whole record of just, you know, I get pigeonholed sometimes as being quite miserable, and I try not to be. I think a lot of my tunes are quite hopeful, but you know, there's an aesthetic that comes with what I do in terms of the folk genre, and so I do kind of play around with it a little bit, and it was just a bit like a diary entry, you know, just sort of, I just kind of wrote down how I was feeling and what I was going through. It also referenced other songs in that song as well. Yeah, there's a line that references my, I've got a song called Sandwiches, which is about having a psychotic episode. I've got bipolar affective disorder. And this kind of answers your question as well in terms of what compelled me to write it. The love I've been shown through that illness and through learning to cope with it has been really, you know, again, my friendship groups and support networks have been really profoundly important in my recovery.
Mm.
And but yeah, there's a line in the song which is all my hope, there's not much left, and that's a direct reference to a song called Sandwiches, which is, it ends with the line all my hope, and that song describes one of the worst nights of my life in terms of having bipolar, and that was a particular night where I was very ill.
Yeah, and because people say bipolar, but I've never heard it as bipolar affective disorder.
That's its full name. No, it's just a shortened. You could say bipolar, just the shortened, not really a nickname, but shortened descriptor for it. Yeah, there's lots of different, there's lots of different experiences within that diagnosis. There's type 1 and type 2, and people, it just describes going between two states, depression being one main one and then mania being another, and then the frequency and the intervals at which it happens, you go between those two states, varies between individuals. But yes, it's a tricky one.
when you're writing this song, because you really sort of encapsulate the feelings that you. So I'm guessing this is the feelings that you're feeling within the depression state.
Yeah, I think it's quite reflective. I don't think I was necessarily depressed when I wrote it. It's funny. I remember reading a good quote about songwriters and depression, and I can't remember who said this, but they were like, I never write when I'm really depressed because I'm too busy depressed. Being depressed.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. So on the other side of it, it's like, you know, I had this situation, I've been through it.
Now
I'm on the other side of it, and now you're reflecting on when you were in that position.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, like I find writing quite hard, where I'm trying to, it's like doing a puzzle. You know, you've got what you want to say, but then you've also got what the song demands. And then also you've got in the back of your mind, or maybe at the forefront of your mind, like a critic who is criticizing you as you go along, and you have to try it.
So that's not good. Don't do that. Oh, why would you say that? Yeah.
And that's really hard to sometimes turn off. And I do remember that particular voice does get me. When I get miserable in the studio, it's because that voice is too loud.
Yeah. How do you quieten it?
Oh, that's a really good question. Meditation's an option, but that's not really, I don't think that's really true for me. I do meditate in the studio particularly, but I think sometimes just mindlessly playing really helps. Like, just sort of, it's really cavalier to say you ignore it, because it's not really ignoring it. It's just you
working
just,
through it.
Yeah, and when you focus on something, you then become, I then become obsessed a little bit. So like, if I'm focused on lyrics, I'll be scribbling options over and over again. There'll be like tons of potential verses. I remember the last line for the song that got finished. Is my bones are filled with dread. I think there was another line in it that I kept. I couldn't find. I didn't want to repeat Shadows Whisper Surrender, Embarrassment Up Ahead. I didn't want to have that line again. And I think I figured that out live, you know. I think I figured that out. I was, my bones are filled with dread. Boom. And like, yeah, sorry.
I just love the way it reads, because I think sometimes when you hear the songs that are sung, and then when you kind of read it back, it's like it also can live as poetry.
Yeah,
away from that. So you kind of gave us like the first section, which is kind of like the self-reflective, slightly self-depreciating.
Yeah,
and then you kind of jumped into like the idea of like, yeah, terror lives inside my chest, and yes, I find it overwhelming, disappearing into thin air. All my hope, there's not much left.
Yeah.
Are you talking to yourself?
Yeah, I'm talking about myself.
Talking to yourself about yourself. Because it's like you're in responding to yourself as well. Yeah.
It's maybe a letter to... I don't know if the song was written to myself in the sense that, like... I think, weirdly, I had the audience in mind. Or at least... Not necessarily like an audience, like a crowd. But like a listener. And, you know, I joke around sometimes and say the album reads like, well, I don't joke around at all. I say that the album sort of reads like an existential diary entry. It's like a snapshot of a particular time and a version of myself who I was in that moment. And terror lives inside my chest, and yes, I find it overwhelming. Yeah, it's very personal, but it's very true. And it's like anxiety. It's talking about... you know, I really felt anxious, and I really felt, you know, I had these moments of real heaviness, and I was talking again about that experience of bipolar, and sometimes there was terror in that experience as well. Like when, with psychosis particularly, it's pretty harrowing.
Physical experience that feels so real for you. What was the sort of scenario that was playing out for you?
So one of the main things with psychosis, it really feels like a horror film. So like, there's a film which I don't recommend anyone to watch, but it's really good. It's called Hereditary, and there's this vibe, like the tone of it is probably like, it's the closest thing I've ever seen to what I've experienced within psychosis. Where like the fear, like the level of fear in that I have when I watch that film, I was like, oh, wow, this is way too familiar. and so that line, the song's quite literal, really. But yeah, with psychotic episodes, you lose sense of reality. So, you know, you become paranoid. One particular example from the past was that once I thought there was a lion pacing up and down my hallway, so I couldn't leave my room.
Wow.
And it's just like, you know, it's like, whoa, that's a lot.
Yeah, of course. And then that's physical fear, mental fear. And then on the other side of it, then do you have to then heal from that level of fear and being scared of what you thought?
Yeah, so like for me it was... you know, medication was a big thing. It gets you back in the room, and then, you know, you understand. Well, you still come for a lot of time. I think this album, I was coming to terms with what that meant for my life, like having those experiences and having gone through what I went through with bipolar and the worst part of it being is that it's like an ongoing thing. Like it might never leave you. But you find ways to cope, and it's, you know, I have a great time outside of horrible times.
Yeah, well, you know, and I hope so. But yeah, but I guess the music is kind of known. Then the music is a big part of that. And like you said, it's like it's so literal. Underwater, taking breath. My lungs, they have much to desire. I had swimming lessons as a child. I hope I still remember.
Mm.
But that's quite a really kind of like, you know, you kind of in that moment, you want to like embrace the child version of you as well.
Mm. Yeah. And it was quite, that was a truly bleak line as well. Like underwater, taking breath.
Because you can see it. It's like, yeah, I feel like I could literally kind of, you know, feel it and see it as you're saying it.
Yeah.
Like that feeling of feeling like you're drowning, essentially.
I don't know why I feel it was sort of funny as well with the, I hope I still remember. Like, you kind of hope you do, you really hope you do remember, yeah, mate. It's sort of, and also, like, I think part of it was a lot of this song is connected to shame.
Do you mean that's why there's this other side of it that's, like, slightly humorous?
Yeah.
To combat the shame.
Yeah, well, like, you know, like, why do you feel you're drowning? Why do you... Why is terror in your chest? And like, sure, there's terror in my chest about, maybe not so much now. It's like been downgraded from terror to just like mild concern. But like with psychosis and bipolar, there's, you know, that's like you have to make changes in your life to really ensure that you stay healthy. And even then, you're at the mercy of circumstances sometimes.
Exactly,
But yeah, with the... The following line with that embarrassment up ahead, it's sort of, it kind of makes sense to me. It's like, it's not a love song, but there is like a fear in, well, fear's the wrong word to use maybe. There's like a worry I have of like when I finally do have a partner and meet someone and like it's having to explain any of this. It's like, oh yeah, by the way, I've got all these, you know, a nice healthy amount of baggage.
You don't want to say that in your first Hinge date.
No!
But you could show the song.
Yeah, well, that's it as well. And also as well, putting it in a song, it immediately makes it manageable.
Yes.
You know, you take that difficult feeling, that hard thing, that fear, that worry, and once you put it to a melody, you can interact with it and understand it. And actually writing, and that's probably the healing aspect of songwriting in a way that you're asking about, which is like once you can hold it in your hands, it that the power is no longer really has power over you in the same way. You know, you can, it's talking about it.
Yeah.
And that again is sort of like a, it kind of feeds into the song in another way. It's like, you know, by being able to talk to your friends about these things, reaching out to someone when you're low, when you're depressed, when you're unwell, those, it really, you know, that's the life-saving element of this stuff. Yeah.
And when you sing this song and you perform this song, like which of your friends like come to the forefront, and what is it about their qualities that, you know, have made you feel so grateful for them?
Yeah, there's a couple of friends. Two of my friends, well, loads of actually. Well, now you said that.
I know, you don't want to miss anyone off.
I know,
but
I'm about to get,
I guess
get
just those,
up.
Yeah, those first, you know, those first faces.
Yeah,
there,
yeah.
Or those, maybe those conversations that you really remember being those lifelines.
I think those people would recognise themselves in that moment. But like, my best friends from school, Ryan and Chris. My two really lovely friends, Adam and Alex, in Nottingham. They, you know, countless people. Like I got when I finished the record, I got on well again. And there was a period of time in the mix process where Scrimshire and Adam and Chris, Scrimshire, Chris and Ryan had to like sort of pull together to kind of help me through it. And also, obviously, my parents, good grief, they're like, they're amazing. I can't express how amazing they are.
Yeah.
And totally non-fearful. You know, they weren't. You know, they'll. The essentially like going through psychosis and can sometimes feel like the end of the world.
Because in that moment, it is.
Yeah, and then, you know, and for them, watching you go through that, it's like, oh, this person never be the same again. Mm. I don't know if they'll get through this one. And they're like, yeah, it's fine. No, we'll get through it. Like, maybe not so cavalier, but essentially that's what it is. And everyone just rolls up their sleeves and cracks on. And I'm incredibly grateful for that, because it's really, Yeah, it's a blessing and a gift, really. And my best friends are just amazing, and I'm a very lucky, fortunate person to have such wonderful people in my life.
And what did they say to you in that moment? So let's say, you know, Adam Scrimshaw, you go to him and you say in this moment, Adam Scrimshaw, a big part of the record, you say, Adam, that, mate.
They do, you know what, when, so if I'm manic or I go through, if have psychosis, for example, the kindest thing that my friends have done for me, just listen and be there. Just hold space.
Mm.
And because it's, you know, it's quite terrifying. Like I've done a mental health first aid course recently, and there was a video where you're watching these two people, and one of them's going through a psychotic episode, and the other person is trying to find the best way to help. And it's so kind. I would be completely detached from reality or askew, and I would say maybe hurtful things definitely worrying and concerning things. And the people in my life that were near me at the time would be like, it's all right, man. Okay, cool. Do you want to go for a coffee? Or do you want to drink? Like just like really simple, because there's not, you know, if you ever have someone in your life or come across anybody experiencing psychosis, it's a really hard thing to navigate, and it's frightening.
Mm.
It's really frightening. And being peaceful and gracious to those people in those moments is really, I've been the beneficiary of gracious and peaceful people.
Yeah. I think it's so important to hear, because I think the easiest response is to confront fear with fear,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then to, you know, you're, the scaredness of the person that you love, or, you know, going through something like that, the fear can kind of be like, ow, you know, and
yeah.
then you escalate
oh my
and escalate.
Goodness.
Yeah.
yeah.
Who would you have shown like this song to first, or some of these verses to?
So before I'd finished the record, I sent all the lyrics to some friends of mine, including my agent Naomi, and like I was so proud of the lyrics. I think because it took a lot of work to get them to the point at which they were ready to be on a record.
What was the work like? Because I think they're so poignant, like, you know, we said it before, but the kind of like the physical way in which you tell the story of how you're feeling, like, what did you have to shave stuff off? Did you have to explore?
Yeah.
Like, what sort of, yeah, what work did you do to get it to be so poignant?
Lots of editing, lots of, you know, you're getting, essentially you're trying to get rid of all the dead weight, stuff that doesn't need to be there. And also as well, like, because I had the title, and once I'd ordered the tracks, I wanted it to read like a story. And like the album it's not like a collection of songs where it's like the best tracks are number one and da 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 da. It's sort of it maps out a journey. And like, so the first song, this song, I'm Grateful for My Friends, relates to the first song of the record, which is Guilt. And that tells a specific story of like moving between states. So moving from this guilty, like depressed feeling to gratitude. And I really wanted that journey reflected across the record. And so it was really, it's really cool getting to explore that. And also it kind of came out naturally. Like it sort of, once I started trying to tell the story, it became obvious where things should be.
In the sort of lineage of,
of
the music. Because I feel like gratitude is like, I don't know, I feel I live by gratitude. Like I you know, and whenever I fall off, I know that it's because I haven't been like doing my gratitude journaling. Like I've got a WhatsApp group with my friends. We've got like, we call Gratitude Girls.
Oh, nice.
And we write every morning what we're grateful for, take a picture and put it in the group as three of us.
Wow.
In there. And it's to hold each other accountable. And I always notice, like we were saying, maybe before Christmas, we'd stopped doing it because it was Christmas and drinking and partying, da 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 da. And then we met up before Christmas, like, yeah, how you been feeling? Oh, you know, I don't know, like, something's been a bit off. And then we were like, we haven't been journaling. We haven't been doing it. Like, we've kind of lost it a little bit. So I find, like, yeah. And in, like, self-help books, they kind of say, like, the first thing you should start with is gratitude, sort of as a way to start the healing process. Mm. Like, I'm grateful for my legs today. I'm grateful for my eyes. I'm grateful for my ears. Like, you know, that I'm grateful for the bricks in the house. I'm grateful that there's food in my fridge. Like, just really simple things. And even if you write down the same things every day over time, and if you look back, eventually you'll start to see a shift. And I noticed that I had a car accident about 5 years ago. I'm reading through when I finally was in a space to like stop feeling sorry for myself. I was, sorry for myself. Like, but when I was in a space to start gratitude, and then if I looked at it over the 6 months, like what I was writing completely changed. So I guess if I was going to ask for you, where in your process, you know, from the depression to the mania, where do you get to the gratitude point?
I find it kind of breathtaking to think from where I was when I did my first EP in 2014 to now. And the, you know, we're talking about the Great Escape, moments like that. Like, I can't detach from that, the grace that brought me there, you know, like it kind of, I don't know if I'm very good at doing it every day, but every time I see my friends, I'm nothing but grateful for even having them. Mm. I'm just like, I feel really... Yeah, I do this thing called morning pages, which is not quite a journal, not quite a gratitude list, because a lot of the time it's just like, it's like a brain. Yeah, exactly.
Do you do the three pages?
Or? Yeah, 3A4.
Okay, yeah. A4. Oh, 45. I'm slacking because I've got like the little notebook.
I was chatting to someone there, like, A5.
It's an hour, you know? It's an hour in the morning.
It's 45, If I'm fast, it's 45 minutes, but it's long. And I did morning pages a lot during the record, making the record, especially when I realised that I wanted to self-produce it. But yeah, gratitude day to day. There's a phrase my old man said to me once, which is like, you live on grace and favour. And that's really true, you know, like, even from, you know, from when I started playing, like just by playing music, I'm reminding myself every day how I started. Like, I had a guitar teacher, wonderful man called Richard Batty, who petitioned my parents to let me have guitar lessons. And like, we were supposed to do a piano and we had some guitar lessons in secret. And then he was like, I've got to tell your parents. So he did, and they let me play guitar, and that changed my whole life.
Wow. And that, you one, know, like, one person's grace.
Yeah. You know, like to take a chance. And then, and Stephen, who did my artwork. So even just looking at the record, so it's a painting of me holding a pink ukulele.
Yeah.
It would have been ages ago, like 2016 or maybe a bit later, 2018. He was like, mate, I'm going to start painting again. Can I take a picture of you holding a pink ukulele? And I was like, yeah, all right. So he comes over, puts a pink ukulele, takes a picture of me. And then like 6 months later, I get that picture. I get a photograph of an easel with this painting, and he's like, "It's all right, isn't it?"
Wow.
And he actually came up with the title. He made a joke, and the punchline was like, "I'll just call this The King of Misery," and I was like, "Boom, title."
That's the album.
Yeah,
name.
That's exactly it. And it was like, you know, I'll do my very best to make sure this is in record shops everywhere, because like that, you know, that level of creativity and care. And Stephen's made me cry before with his drawing. Like, he'd done all my artwork since 2004.
Wow.
So like, when I was in school making demos, he'd do like the artwork for it. I've got a tattoo on my arm, one of his stuff there. And to have that friendship with what, like, one of, like 20 years now, even mates and making art together. And he's seen me through all these stages. And for example, one of the big downsides that I'm still kind of navigating with bipolar and is like the weight gain of it all. Like, you kind of put on weight and my body image, like my own like self-love is like plummeted. And I remember this one particular time, Stephen gave me my 30th birthday, gave me this painting, like an ink drawing of me. And he'd framed it in a beautiful wooden frame. And I remember just being like, oh yeah, cheers, mate. And it was sort of me in a kind of larger state. And I kind of was not dismissive at the moment, but I was like, oh, cheers, all right, cool. And then like a couple of weeks later, I was just on my bed and I just like picked up this picture and I just wept. Because it was just like he'd managed to like capture something really beautiful when I couldn't see any, you know? And that, you know, in terms of things to be grateful for, you know, that's really
to cool. be seen.
Yeah.
And in to be, just to be seen, yeah. you know, and not through the eyes of yourself, which is like can be so destructive, but to be seen on the other side, like he sees you as in the beautiful state that that's you are, in whatever state that is. That's such a
and that really reflects like my friendships in general as well, because you know, when you go through bipolar, when you go through depression, one of the big pieces of that pie is hopelessness. That you think there's no future for me, I'm unlovable, I don't have a chance in the world, I'm done, whatever, man. And then your friends don't see that.
Yeah.
Your friends see the future and what things can be and who you are. And like, you know, and they love you and they love on you. And for me, that's been huge. Like a complete survival, you know, like my survival guide would be like, make some friends.
Make some friends, hold them dear. Because you know, like the journey of the song and like even hearing, you know, you talk about your journey through all the different stages, like you feel the lift at the chorus and you don't actually expect the chorus to come in like that.
Right.
You could just keep on going. You know, if you took the chorus out, it could be a real downward spiral, worrying, concerning song. But then the chorus kind of brings it up and you kind of repeat the lines like, I'm grateful for my friends. I'm grateful for my friends. You know, it just carries on and repeats.
Yeah, it feels like a mantra almost.
Yes, it does. Yeah. Like, you know, saying it because you feel it, saying it because you need to feel it, saying it because you want them to know it as well.
That's all of those things are true. Yeah.
What makes a good folk song?
Oh, storytelling and like intimacy. I have to be careful because I don't think, I feel like folk's the nearest town to where I live musically. There's some like really lovely modern folk songs that I love. There's like Wendell Walker by Andy Schauf.
Okay. We like to write these down. Yeah, Wendell Walker. We make playlists, you know.
It's fair. Yeah, it's a good tune. It's on like, I think he had an album called Bearer of Bad News. And it really captures like this kind of like Dylan-esque storytelling where, you know, and it's not even necessarily, like, I wouldn't say Bob Dylan's the originator of this style, but like it's following a character through an event or a time in their life with a beginning, middle and end. I don't think I'd necessarily fall into that category. I'm quite existential with my writing. Authenticity as well, like, it's a bit of a buzzword, but trying to get to the heart of what it is you're trying to say and then saying it as simply as possible for me as well. Like, I'm not big on, like, I'm not actually that massively into, like, huge metaphors or anything. Like, although they can be useful in songwriting. Like, songwriting is such an interesting... It's not, like, a linear sport as well. Like, you might write a really good song and then the next song might not be any good. And you kind of just... It's although over time it does get better. Like, you know, from, like, the age of, like, 14 to 34, it's, like, you know, there's a big difference.
Because I always thought people were, like, born with it, but I guess it's not like that.
No, not at all. I'm just as capable as I've ever been of writing a terrible song.
I could never believe that, Dowdy.
And maybe this goes for music in general, but having a bit of bravery about it as well. Being okay with, like, because most of it is just sounding bad. Like, most of the process is like, oh, I don't think this is there yet. Oh, I don't think this is there yet. And it's learning to be okay with that feeling, like wading out into open water and just sort of, I just said I'm not big on metaphors, it's coming in the water.
But now you're waiting.
And like just sort of allowing yourself to just float. And I remember the process of this, with this album, I remember distinctly giving up a lot. Like, not as in quitting, but just being like, fine, like, is this where we're at? Okay, screw it, I'm just going to keep going. And like almost like when you had a cry, and you have to go back to work.
In the toilet. And you just come back into the studio.
Yeah, just sort of a bit, you know, that feeling after like a big emotional shift where you're just sort of a bit drained and you're still doing it.
Yeah.
And that's you know, almost like the ego gets, it's like a big, you know, the balloon of ego gets popped and you just have to kind of carry on. And then just hoping that it will connect to people. Because I'm not the person, I know what I like. I know as a songwriter, I know that I really appreciate being direct. And there's, yeah, and sometimes, you know, yeah, that self-expression is really hard to do. And I think it's really important just to kind of, to say what you mean.
Yeah, and be self-aware, but not so self-aware that you're like, crushing yourself to stopping. I like the bit, write an email, don't hit send. I lied, I didn't even write it. Because so many people are like, oh yeah, so sorry, replied to it in my head. You know?
Yeah, got back to you.
Yeah, I thought I got back to you. I tell that lie at least once a week.
Oh, mate, yeah. That literally just lifted out of my life. There was someone I was emailing. Yeah, it was funny. Like, I was told him, I could say, I always feel weird. Like, it's a bit name droppy, but
it's Adam Buxton. I listened to the podcast. That bit made me crack up.
We'd send each other emails and they'd be like months apart. And I'd be like, oh, I'm really sorry for the slow reply, Adam. And he'd be like, then he'd be a couple of weeks, you know, he'd do the same thing. It was just, it was just lifted out of my emo habits.
Also, your emo Adam Buxton is pretty cool, even if you don't even press send.
You know what it was? It was always like, just I'd never say, like, I wanted to always say, like, thank you, because I supported him for a couple of gigs. When he wrote his book, he was very lovely to let me open for him when he was doing his warm-up shows. And then when he released the book, he brought me back for a couple more shows. And at the end of the shows, I'd be, like, so gassed and just be, like, I'd be kind of in love with this guy. I'm like, mate, thank you so much for just having me along. And then I'd chicken out of, like, this is too, like sort of just too gushy. I need to pull it back. And yeah, but anyway, yeah, I get a lot of email anxiety. I used to. Do I get it so much now? Probably not. When you're busy, it's that you become a bit more functional with it. But if you've got time, you can just like, oh, I'm spending too.
Don't get Grammarly. Nah, I realise I can't write for shit. Yeah. Nothing. It makes sense to me. It just doesn't make sense in Grammarly.
Yeah.
Don't overthink it.
Does it give you like a tone meter as well? It's like...
Tone meter.
Yeah, like some sort of like measure of how good. Like, oh, yeah, I think your tone could be like a little bit more sweeter.
Like, I'm just like literally like, do you know what? Let's just get back to basics. Just write what I mean.
There's a manager who I've emailed in the past. He's like monosyllabic sometimes, and it's so helpful because you just know where you stand.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like, can I do this? Like, no.
Yeah.
All right.
I think that you have, like, you know, you spoke about Adam, and I know Giles Peterson's a massive fan, and I think there's something in the vulnerability in who you are and the way you write that I think you probably form a lot of bromances because men maybe thank you for saying things that they can't say themselves. And I just wonder, as a black man as well, speaking about mental health, you know, how important is it for you to be visible?
You know, it's really funny. This is all out of necessity. I can't do anything else. Like, I'm not, like, if I could, go, yeah. Like, I, as a black man as well, like, it's fascinating because I sit in a fairly, like, lonely space. Although actually, like, there's bands kicking off all out, like, black people in more diverse music genres. Like, recently I heard a band called White Lands. I don't know if you come across them. Oh, check out White Lands. Okay. They're really, really good. They're like a shoegaze band, and it's like, and they're black, but they are so incredibly talented, and they make something that's so real and authentic, and it really, like, musically scratches an itch for me that I haven't heard in a long time. But yeah, vulnerability as a black man, as a man, I think I have a strong conviction that it's important.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like one of the greatest things that happened to me when I was a young person is I saw Grey Reverend play. Grey Reverend sometimes tours. I think he actually mainly tours with Cinematic Orchestra now. Grey Reverend opened for Cinematic Orchestra at the Concord in Brighton in 2008. My friend Chris Boot had bought us both tickets to go see him. That was my introduction to the Cinematic Orchestra. And then seeing Grey Reverend on stage, it was a guy that looked like me with a guitar that was nearly identical to mine. He had like a Taylor, I can't remember the model number, maybe like a 110 or something. And I had a Big Baby, which is like a Dreadnought, sort of similar looking guitars. And we had hair that was kind of similar. Then my friend Chris was like, bro. And I was like, I know. And I've been playing music for a long time, even then. But I felt seen. You know, I didn't know this guy from Adam. He didn't know me. But he had an effect that, he had a measurable effect on the rest of my life. And Cinematic Orchestra have since been like a massive influence and love of mine. Particularly the song they did with Patrick Watson, To Build a Home, and then Grey Reverend's version. There's a lovely live version of the song. It's probably my favourite version of To Build a Home. It's on, they did the Royal Albert Hall records. They did a live recording from that. It's just exquisite. Yeah, and seeing that exampled is really important. It lets you know it's possible.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, like some of my favourite moments at gigs happened recently in Nottingham, where a young woman came up to me and was like, I just want to let you know, I felt completely seen up there. And then she asked me for a hug, and that was cool. But it was that thing of, you know, sometimes we are treated like being in folk, or, you know, being a black person in folk, it can be quite isolating and quite lonely. But the acceptance I've had, and again, another thing to be grateful for, like people like Yaz and like the Nottingham scene, embracing that, you know, Giles Peterson playing me back in 2014. And even now, obviously now even more so, but being welcomed into a community when people might have treated you as sort of, might have othered you in some way or form. Like I felt, especially like on, you know, like playing mostly all white lineups and that kind of thing. And it's not lost on me it's not, unusual is the wrong word to use. It's not necessarily a mainstream phenomenon yet.
Emphasis on yet. I think, you know, the internet's kind of broken down so much of that. And maybe, like, you know, back in 2004, there was another Dowdy somewhere in another area.
I used to joke around that in 2014, I could count on two hands how many other black singer-songwriters in the folk genre that I knew. And now I've lost count.
Yeah, which is a great thing. I love hearing it, you know, and it opens you up. Like, you've mentioned artists now that we can go away. And we can check out, and like through your lens and through your eyes, and all the young people that are going to come and see you play, even that woman that might have seen you, she might now be like, you know what, I feel seen, I want to go and write some music. But sometimes you just need to be an entry point for people, and that's okay as well.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's just love and you know, sharing these stories. Like, I am grateful for my friends. That song being about being bipolar and the love and gratitude I have for the people in my life that have helped me over the years. When other people hear those stories, they feel able to share their own. And it's just this kind of knock-on effect of gratitude begets gratitude, and it kind of keeps on going.
Is there one line of the song? We always talk about like the mother of lines or the godfather of lines within songs. Is there one line of the song that you would love to leave people with, if you had one line from it? Or
it really is, it's such a basic line, just the chorus, I'm grateful for my friends. Like, or maybe the lines that came before it, like embarrassment up ahead, but I'm grateful for my friends. The feeling the dark, but now it's death. Like those particular lines are like incredibly true, and it puts into context as well. It's not just, I'm not just grateful for my friends. I'm grateful in the context of this song, like in the context of the situation, in the context of heaviness, like still having gratitude, that's when it's really important. And also this one thing I was going to say about the song as well, like it's not a happy ending. It's a positive ending, you know.
It's not an ending. It's not the end.
Exactly. And I think I've had some responses on the record where people have been kind of confused, or well, not confused, but just sort of wanting a different outcome.
Whose film is it? Sorry, whose life is this? What outcome do they want?
And like a happy one,
right?
Like, they're like, what have you done to it? You know, and I describe the tune, the whole record, really, as like going from a place of like not being able to get out of bed because you're so low, but then getting to a point where you can get out of bed and can get on with your day. Like that's a song of someone who's just like trying to get by.
Getting by.
And it's, you know, it's not like a Hollywood ending where I ride off into the sunset and you think, oh, there he goes.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, it's
with guitar slung over your back.
Yeah, like there's a bit of a limp on that song, you know. It's not quite there
limping to the sunset.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly it.
So the next album, do you pick up from the sunset?
I take the next record, I already have a title.
Want to share?
No.
Okay, fair enough.
Wait. It's there.
Okay.
I've been doing it automatically without realizing it. But yeah, it's going to be, I can tell you. Yeah, go on, it's weird.
Yeah, tell me.
So just All My Love.
All My Love.
Yeah. That's the working title
All
anyway.
All My Love. Love that.
And it's kind of, I don't really know, I'm in the process of starting. And I just want it to be a bigger snapshot. Like, you know, The King of Misery is a slice of a very specific part of my life. It doesn't reflect the fullest of pictures. Because good grief, if my whole life was like that, I'd be like, it'd be really heavy. But there's so much joy to explore, and there's so much. There is also still grief and loss and complicated feelings to navigate, and that's kind of what I'm looking at, really. So All My Love kind of is, I think, the next one. Well, I think so. Don't hold me to it. It could be ages before you see it.
Yeah, you know, we still got this album to
exactly
to enjoy,
but it'll be a partner to that record. Just more love. Yeah.
Well, thank you for writing, Dowdy, and thank you for sharing. Just thank you for being you. I think you're such an important, you know, artist like in our generation. And I feel like, you know, this album, the next album, just you as an artist, what you do and how you write and how you express yourself is going to sort of create that knock-on chain of effect that we spoke about and the next generation of artists. So,
I really appreciate it. You know, I'm a hype man at heart.
Thank you, Dowdy Mansicco. Go and listen to The King of Misery.
Big ups.
And after hearing this episode, then definitely check out I Am Grateful for My Friends as well.
Thank you.
Because that's, beautiful song. Thank you.
Massive love.